Jessa and me are going to be doing some stand-up in a town near you if you live near one of the following towns. Salt Lake City, July 12th. Hoquiam. Hoquiam. Have we come up with a...
It's Hoquiam.
Hoquiam. Hoquiam for a Dream on July 13th. Yakima, Washington, July 14th. Tacoma, Washington on July 17th. Chehalis, Washington, July 18th, and then Boise, Idaho, July 20th, 21st, and 22nd. Be there or be somewhere else.
Sure, free Mormon in the Meth Head is great, but have you tried just giving us money?
I haven't yet. Tell me more.
Go to patreon.com, Mormon in the Meth Head, and for $5, you can get bonus episodes. You can see videos of me just laughing for no reason.
What?
You can hear a podcast with our kids on it. And you'll hear interviews that we do with other people who also have podcasts.
Wow, this sounds great. I'm going to check that out. What was that address again?
Patreon.com// one of the slashes, Mormon in the Meth Head.
We just lined up our chakras, so you better watch the fuck out. You're listening to Mormon and the Meth Head.
If you put a Mormon and a meth head together, this is what they sound like. Aaron Woodall and Jessa Reed are friends. Listen to them talking to Mike. Mormon and the Meth Head.
I had a car when I was, this is what it's like to be my parent.
Okay.
So when I started doing stand up, I left my ex-husband. We'd always just had one car. And I moved into my parents' house, and then I went to buy a car, and my credit was too fucked up to buy a car. So I called my stepdad, who he and my mom still live together, but they barely communicated. So he was my go-to when I wanted to do stuff that my mom wouldn't go for. And he co-signed for a car for me. And then that was my road car while I was doing stand-up. So immediately after I start doing meth, I'm driving in downtown Portland, and I hear this loud pop noise, and then my car will only drive in reverse. I think that's what it was. If I remember correctly, it would only drive in reverse. Yeah, it was something really weird. Like, I barely got it off the road.
Mm-hmm.
I almost positive is that it would only drive in reverse, but don't hold me to that. Anyway, I get it to the side of the road and I leave it. And for some reason, I know that I've dropped the transmission. For some reason, I'm convinced that that is what has happened. I have dropped the transmission or something like that.
That
shit
sounds
that I heard.
Real.
Yeah. And so I have my friend. I'm like, well, I'm not going to pay for it anyway because I'm a meth addict now. I was a fresh meth addict. So I paid this tweaker to steal it and drive it into the river. Like, that was just go drive it into a body of water.
Why?
So that I could say it was stolen, and then my parents could claim it on the insurance, it would get paid off, and I wouldn't be fucking them over financially.
Okay.
This was me trying to be a good kid.
Okay, good for you.
So,
sweetheart.
Unfortunately, my stepdad just stopped paying the insurance on the card. Car. So the next day when I called him, he was like, the car's not insured. And I was like, fuck. So I called the tweaker, and I'm like, did you already get rid of the car? And he's like, yeah, I already handled it. So what he means by handled it is he drove it backwards up into a parking garage.
Yes, it only goes in reverse.
And parked it. He then sliced.
He just drove it backwards. How far? Oh, my God.
He then sliced all of the interior with a knife.
Okay.
He busted the front off of the... the door to the glove box, and then just broke all the glass or something. Like, just vandalized it, basically. And left
But what's
it
the point of the parking garage?
And just left it in the parking garage where it accrued $1,000 in parking fees.
Wait a minute. So wait, no one ever at the parking garage reported this vandalized car? They just let it sit there and kept putting tickets on it?
Maybe he didn't fuck the glass up. Well, I don't think they put tickets on it, but at some point there was some type of audit where they were like, man, this car's been here for a minute.
Okay.
And so then my mom,
I was imagining just some asshole meter maid walking by, seeing a car that was just like busted glass, and just being like, "Well, you should have moved."
Maybe he didn't break the glass. I know the inside of the car, like there was nothing salvageable on the inside of the car, and it was just annoyingly like the horn was broken off. Like it was just annoyingly.
Wait, so did you go back and see it?
No, oh. I'm like full blown tweaker by now. My mom was furious.
Wait a minute,
So they called and contacted my mom, who's still making car payments on this car because it wasn't insured.
Oh, no.
Oh, God. So then she's just stuck with this, like, super vandalized car.
And did they make her pay the parking fine?
Yeah, she had to pay the parking fines. She had to pay for the car. She then had to get everything replaced inside of it. And it was just a belt.
What do you mean? What? That was all that was wrong with that car.
I'm. We'll have to ask her later. I can't remember all the details, but it was some like $200.
Oh my!
And I costed her thousands of dollars. So then she fixes the car. My poor fucking mom. She fixes the car, and then my stepdad takes it. As his car, but then just keeps like lending it to me. I stole my mom's car one time in the middle of the night. The first time I ever did ecstasy, I just took her car in the middle of the night to go to the dance club. Did ecstasy. They have a thing called Saturday Market in Portland.
Okay.
And it takes place under a bridge that is a parking lot when it's not Saturday Market. So it was Friday night. I parked my mom's car, went in. So it's like, sure, this is a good time to try ecstasy. Got so fucked up on ecstasy that I forgot to move my mom's car, so her car gets towed, and I'm like rolling for till 3 o'clock in the afternoon the next day. So she's like trying to get a hold of me. I'm hiding out at some dude's house, like just I'm too high to get my mom's car. She had to go get her own car.
You're the worst daughter. You're the worst.
I just stole her car and forgot to fucking. I used to sneak out and forget to. I would get so like high on psychedelics that I would forget to sneak back in. Oh, the worst. Yeah,
I don't know. I can't think of a single bad thing that I did.
I know. Like, it's so crazy.
I can't think of anything I did. Like nothing like that. Oh, I guess I could remember one time I just didn't text my mom. that we were gonna go out to like a diner after this. Like I went to see some friends play with their parents had driven, and I was supposed to text and say, hey, is it okay if we go out to Denny's or something? But I thought that they would say no, so I just said I'm not gonna text them.
So you forgot.
And then I got home like midnight or something. It was late. It was whatever. Yeah. It was late, and my mom was asleep in my bed. Oh. When I got home, I kind of turned on my light, and my mom's like, like out from under the covers. And I'm like, she was like, where have you been?
Oh my God.
Where have you been? And that was the worst thing I ever did to them.
Yeah, that's real similar. Real similar to thousands of dollars. Oh God. We'll have to ask her that story later because I feel like I messed up some of the details. But I have not stopped talking about voices. Are you sick of hearing me talk
about
it?
And the voices have not stopped talking about you. They will not shut up. It's just Jessa, 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 Jessa. And Jess is like, voices, 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 voices. And it's like, get married. Ugh.
This is new relationship energy.
Yeah.
Voices, me and the voices in my head.
But no, you haven't. I'm not tired of it. I think they're cool.
Here's what I think.
Jessa hears voices, you guys.
No. Okay, so when I say voices, so we are taught that every thought in your head is just this one stream of consciousness. Just your brain has these thoughts, right? But, so like the aliens told me, by the way, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, go back to the beginning. Go back to the beginning, otherwise I'm going to sound more nuts than I
then
sound
she
ordinarily.
Really needs to, you know.
So the alien said that our body that we come back over and over again, our true self comes back over and over again, and we experience life in the physical body, and the physical body, you get a new one every time. And the physical body has its own artificial intelligence. And that is like your conscious mind. That is your ego. And that you were experiencing life kind of first person shooter through the eyes of this ego. And but that ego is not you. That your true self is coexisting with this ego. And so a lot of like spiritual practices and things that I try to do early on, we're trying to kill the ego, crush the ego. Like, and I eventually learned to coexist with the ego as like a just a loud, kind of slightly annoying roommate. So when I have a good show, I'm throwing the ego a bone. It gets to feel real good. It's kind of the loud monkey mind. I call it the big voice. Because then you also, though, you have the small voice that is your true self. And those are two different voices, but we think it's one voice. But if you really step back and let it come into focus, you have those internal debates with yourself, right? Yes. You have the like, you feel...
Constantly, I'm worried yeah. about stuff where I'm, and I go back and forth on something.
Yeah.
But when you first said voices to me, it didn't resonate because I'm like, oh, well, I have those debates, but they're both in my voice. It's just me. They don't feel separate.
Yeah.
It's just me. You know, I just feel like I'm talking to myself.
Right. But that's because but they have a different tone. Right? Because then when I say stuff like voices, people think like audibly. I don't have like a duffel bag telling me to kill people. I mean, there is a different tone. One is loud. One gets its bruised. You know, when other people don't like you, it gets super affected. I call it the Jessa that understands how everything works. That's just very rational and can look at things from the big picture and has this kind of overlying philosophy of life. That is like, okay, but this and this and this is how it works. And I know that I feel this way because I feel like the ego is very much connected to feelings
mm-hmm.
and experiences things like jealousy. And then it'll just be bah, 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 about something I'm jealous about or insecure about. And then the part of me that understands how everything works is like much quieter, but is like, nobody's thinking about you. They're all just thinking about themselves. You are worried about what people are thinking about you, but they are just sitting somewhere worrying about what people are thinking about them. Nobody gives a fuck, you know? And so this small voice I have learned and cultivated a relationship with for 2 decades now, to where when I was driving down from Portland, this voice was like, slow down. Like if I am tuned into this voice and have shut the loud roommate up enough, I will instinctually know when every single speed trap. There was at least 7 speed traps between the way up to Portland and the way back that I knew like 3 minutes ahead of time to slow down. If I can be in a place where I'm like this kind of meditative state where I'm just tuned into that voice, I can do any, like I am just so tuned into the environment.
And that's the same Jessa understands how everything works
yeah,
voice.
I think so.
So it's not just like conscious knowledge that you have. It's also
yeah.
The
Jessa that understands how everything works, I think is plugged into a collective consciousness, and that's why she understands how everything works. She's very separate from emotions, fears, anxieties.
Not just things you've learned personally firsthand.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm.
It's she can that voice can give you insight and teach you things.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like if I have an interaction with you and you hurt my feelings, monkey mind is like, meh, but me and me and like, meh. But then the Jessa that understands how everything works can look at what you said and know why you said it, understand where you were coming from and completely separate from how it affected me and just put herself in your shoes. Very objective. So when I'm in that place, when I'm tuned into that place, it's just very easy for me to forgive things. It's very easy for me to let things slide. Very easy to detach from outcomes. Very easy for me to see why things are ultimately in my best good. But if you've been taught your whole life that this loud ass fucking roommate is who you are, you're just experiencing life through something that is so easily hurt, easily affected, not very good at putting itself back together, not very good at pulling itself out of the rafters. And so you're just kind of tossed around by life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I think that a lot of like enlightenment and waking up is learning to start to tune in more to the small voice. And what I have been talking about lately is what if there is not just these two? Because I have had some experiences recently with the voice from when I was younger, this voice that tells you nobody loves you, nobody cares about you, you're not good at anything. The voice that tells you that
people... Oh, you mean my inner monologue?
Yes, exactly. Oh, okay. And so many people's inner monologue. And I haven't heard from this voice in so long. And I think I thought, because kind of when I went through the first alien thing and my sense of self-worth changed during that time. That's when I learned to love myself. That's when I learned to accept myself for who I am. And if I don't like something, I have the option of changing it. Like, none of this is written in stone. I'm not married to any of this. If I don't like something about myself, I can change it for myself, not for other people. But that I learned to really stop seeing myself through other people's eyes, because I stopped seeing myself through my ego. So my ego still does that. I still feel it when people don't like me, but I feel it on that side. And I know that that side is an illusion. This voice, a bully, is how I was talking to Mary Ryzinski about it. I was describing it, and she was like, I was just talking about this voice, because this voice projects onto people you care about. This voice, like, I've had weekends, entire weekends, where I'm locked in my room with anxiety and depression and can't do anything or talk to anyone, because I feel the crushing weight of this voice. Just,
yeah, again, this is just me every day. This happens to me all the time, but I know that feeling. I resonate with that.
So to believe that that's you talking to you, because it's speaking in first person, you know, it's speaking in nobody cares about me.
Can I tell the experience that I had?
Yes.
I just realized that voice wasn't me. And it did come at the end of like 3 weeks of you talking about voices. I know that we were talking about it in we did an interview with Paul Gilmartin,
yeah,
from the Mental Illness Happy Hour podcast. That's going to be on our Patreon at mm-hmm. some point in time. But with him, we were talking about voices.
I got into
weird stuff about colors that no one responded to. And I felt super stupid. I had just had like my first like experience. I was like, okay, I think I get what Jess is talking about. And I had had... So I was having a day where I was super wound up, and I decided to lay on my bed and think about it. I had an hour. I was like, let's just think this through and fix yourself. And so I got a little high first, and I just want to put that in as a disclaimer for the weird stuff I'm about to say. I just feel like the weed, as I was thinking about it, helped me to visualize in a way that I couldn't before. And I really did feel that wound up, super anxious and aggressive voice being like, I could see it. I saw it as a part of me and not as all of me. And I saw it on the right side of my face, and it was red. And then there was this other voice that was a lot smaller, took up less space, because the red voice went from like the bottom of my jaw all the way up to like my temple, like that whole side of my face. And on the other side, on the left side, just small, just right up by the temple, in blue, was this calmer voice that was like talking it down. And I sat there and I had different thoughts in my head, I could see these parts of my head lighting up, you know? And it was just this really cool, weird drug experience. But I felt like, oh, okay, I get that. I can see that.
And then there was a third.
You know, I was going to leave it out because I still feel so weird about it.
Don't.
All right. Then there was a third light in this, like, you know, black silhouette of my head that I was imagining. I had there was a third bright. It was the smallest of the three, and it was white, and it was at the very top of my head. So it was higher up than the little blue one on the left and the big red one on the right. And it was like centered at the top of my head. It was white and it was little, and it did not talk to the big red voice. And it was, thoughts were like really kind of far away, but it felt like it was talking to the blue voice. And now I feel so fucking weird.
Are you feel weird on this podcast? The stuff I've said?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
What if we... Okay, so what... I think that maybe we exist in a room. Have I talked about like first-person shooter versus RPG? Have I talked about that on our podcast?
I believe if not, you have.
A quick overview. So according to the aliens, the life that we're experiencing in the physical body is like a first-person shooter through the eyes of this physical body. And that is primarily experienced through the ego. But that your actual self is, and I always point above my right shoulder, is playing like an RPG. So that version of yourself is looking down and can see the whole picture, is deciding what it wants to experience, puts things into motion, and then watches them play out. But that's not as exciting because you're not actually experiencing that. I believe where we actually exist, where this consciousness is taking place, is not inside of our brain. That we are actually somewhere else. Like our true self, that it feels like we're experiencing it in this physical body because we are somehow connected to this physical body, but that the consciousness that you hear in your mind is taking place somewhere else. And what if that somewhere else is a room, because it feels like a room to me, with multiple pieces of yourself, that just because you were taught your entire life is one thing, you have just always seen it as one thing. And now we are starting to realize that there are multiple pieces of ourselves. And what if some of the people in the room shouldn't be in the room? When I say people, I don't mean separate things or pieces of yourself. But so what the aliens said demons were, because the aliens went through and explained everything from the Bible and was like, yeah, this is all legit, but you guys turned it into a religion, which is weird. And they said that demons were what I would now describe as a program. But this was like 2000, so I didn't have all this computer analogies jargon that I could use. Yeah. So a lot of the game stuff that they said, my brain back then made it into like LARPing, I guess, because I didn't have virtual reality and stuff wasn't, The Sims and stuff wasn't so prevalent that I could be like, oh, this is what they meant. But they said that demons weren't these like scary devils. It was just negative thought patterns, energies that you would adopt as pieces of yourself, but they weren't really pieces of yourself. And then when they ran their mouth, you would believe that they were you. And they would motivate you to do things that were just detrimental to you. So that would essentially be like a virus on your computer or a program that's running. And the example that stood out was jealousy, where jealousy is just running its mouth in your head, saying a bunch of stuff that's almost never true, but is such a detrimental. Jealousy does so much damage to relationships and hold so many people. Envy, believing that because someone else has something, you can't also have it, is such a limiting belief. It holds people back. I mean, people in comedy waste so much time and energy bitching about what other comedians had. And it's like, it is an abundant universe, dog. You could go get that for yourself if you spent just a little less of your time and energy worrying about what other people have.
Well, I think it's so interesting to think of jealousy as one of these voices that you've been describing. I think that would help people, that helped me wrap my mind around, you know, like saying, because it's just, I think a lot of people say, a lot of people are familiar with an idea of like the duality of man, or saying there's a dark part in all of us, you know, everybody's got good and bad. And then like we say a lot of things like that, that I feel like we are comfortable acknowledging that there are different parts of ourself. And I think jealousy is a great example of something that is just so bad for you, like so opposite of what you know to be true. Anytime we know, when we catch ourselves getting jealous, we feel embarrassed because it's so dumb.
Yeah.
When we know that there's like, I know that there's nothing going on between him and her, and I know that she's totally mine and she loves me, but I'm jealous for no reason. Am I being threatened? No. Am I at risk to lose anything? No. So what's my problem? You know? Yeah. And so, yeah, to think of jealousy as something that's not a part necessarily of you, but something that's working in opposition towards you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an infiltrator, a virus that's in your computer that's trying to break you.
I treat my consciousness like it is a computer, and I treat...
My God, the imagery that you were using last night when you were when we were talking about
of going
this
out
kinda,
and taking out.
Yeah, when you you talked about like ripping up the floorboards of your mind and pulling out the wiring and rerouting stuff. Like the words that you use make it very clear that you felt like a little Tron, a little Tron guy, like inside the computer. We're changing stuff.
If I feel like something is, it's usually fear-based, is costing me something that I want, I will force, I call it, like, I will clockwork orange my mind. Like, if I'm afraid of something and being afraid of that something is holding me back in some way, I will force my mind into it. So if there's a situation where I'm jealous and the jealousy is getting in the way, I will force my mind to imagine. The first I figured out is it fear of loss, which is what it usually is for me. We've talked about jealousy for you a lot of time is like competitiveness. For me, it's fear of loss. I think that somehow this person's going to take this person from me rather than not that I've never tried to get an external security there, but that's false. I force my mind to accept all possible scenarios. So if I'm jealous of sex, I will force myself to think about them having sex until I'm desensitized to it. It no longer causes me pain. If I...
You've turned that into a real kink.
But that's a kink, yeah. But that is where that kink came from. But if I'm afraid of losing someone, I will force myself to think about all, like, imagine myself finding out that person's marrying someone else. Picture that conversation. Picture my life without them. Like, and sometimes this is an ongoing process, but until I have, rather than trying to hide from that trigger, and I talk all the time about those triggers. Like, for me, triggers are telling you where you need work, and I don't like hiding from pain. I don't think it helps. I think it makes you weaker and more like vulnerable in a bad way, vulnerable to injury. Yeah. And I think that when there is a trigger and I catch myself getting triggered about something, I treat my mind very much like you have to control your own mind. Someone is going to control your mind. It should probably be you. And I will just clockwork orange whatever I'm afraid of into my brain until I have become desensitized to it. There are other things that if they are holding me back, I treat them like a virus. I find them inside of my consciousness and I rip them out. Social anxiety was keeping me from everything. It was holding me back in my comedy career. It was my life was boring for like 10 straight years. I mean, I like building a family and everything, but like socially, my life was boring because I was this super extroverted.
Well, this was immediately
person.
After your meth years, so yeah. I mean, it's like 7 years of feast and then famine. You had fun. Now you should stay inside for a while.
Yeah, but it made it. It was extremely. I got clean. And the next day had crippling social anxiety, which I never had. I was one of these people that made friends with everyone I met. You could put me in a room and I just the whole room, I took over the whole room, mostly getting them to sign napkins with bullshit. But I got high and killed it getting high. And then when I got clean, I couldn't talk. I got a job in banquets, which you don't talk to the customers. And then when I tried to work in the a la carte restaurant, the first table I walked up to, I was like, and just had to turn around and walk away. And for years, it was these painful social interactions. And I just went further and further inside of myself. And after a decade, that was my entire identity. I'm Jessa. I'm awkward. I have social anxiety. Augie Smith took me to Omaha in like 2008 as his feature. And I was never invited back to the club. I did well on all the shows, but I could not say hello to the manager every time we were around her. I would shut down. And like, she took me to the radio one morning and uh-huh. I got in the car and she was like, hey, and I was like, and then Augie was like, dude, I like, you're weird. I get it. You're weird. But like, could you say hello to people? Like, this is insane. Like, I was fucked up. Yeah. And I got progressively okay, but like 2 years ago, I was like, I'm never going to get anything. I've worked at Big Sky for 3 years and never talked to the industry because I can't. And I'm going to force myself to do it. And so I went inside of myself and I found, where is this programming at? Where is this fear at? What is it connected to? What in my childhood? And I'm like in old storage rooms, digging through file cabinets and pulling everything out and looking and then trying. And then in the physical world, I'm forcing myself to do everything that is hard and everything that's uncomfortable. And I had these, it was just a year of falling on my face. I would go hang out after shows and because I only have two speeds, which is dead silence or telling you the worst thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
And then once I start, I can't stop because I get nervous and I can't stop. Uh-huh. And so people are like, how many kids you have? And I'm like, three. I homeschool them. And I believe that society, blah, 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 you know, and there's like hairs blowing back and shit.
Yeah.
And a ton of just extremely awkward social interactions. I transpose my words. If I'm around people I don't know, that's where that happens. So if I'm in, so my conscious mind won't come up with, I'll weirdly laugh no matter what the person's saying, or I will say the wrong sentence back, or I will, if I try to engage and I haven't actually engaged, I will transpose words so that my sentences don't make any sense. And I had to just do that. I had to just force myself to do that until I could somehow, it's like I was locked out of a room within myself and I had to get into that room and then learn how to work the controls again. And so I never, if I didn't know you and wasn't comfortable.
That's a cool image.
Yeah. And so it was like, I would say stuff. I wish I could think of examples. This was just like a year of me being like, yeah. And then the soap is the car. And people would be like, what? And it's like, fuck. And inside my mind, I'm like, okay, well, that's not, I'm just making sound effects. Like, and I just force myself. I'm just not going to have social anxiety anymore. When I quit smoking, I didn't say I'm quitting smoking. I didn't make a big fucking production out of it because I watched so many people do it. I just said, I don't smoke. That's it. I'm a non-smoker. The day I quit smoking, I'm a non-smoker. And I just didn't. So I did the same thing. I don't have social anxiety. I'm conquering social anxiety. I'm beating social anxiety. I am an extrovert. I am going to get good at this. And sometimes it'll come back. And also,
you have little panic attacks every now and then.
Yeah.
Like when you're around people, I mean, and you're just like, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And you just sneak off.
And then I force myself to go back. When I am under the influence, and this is another thing that I've really thought about in the last week, when I am under the influence of these parts of myself that are not good for me, under the influence of jealousy, I have kidnapped innocent teenagers. Under the influence of social anxiety.
We don't
know
if she was innocent.
She did have hair on the right side of her head. Under the influence of social anxiety, I feel like everyone is looking at me through a fisheye lens. And everyone is squinting at me like, are you an idiot? And if I'm having a social anxiety moment while I'm on stage, I think I'm bombing. And I've had to get to the point where I'm like, this is not real. This feels real. This is not real. And I wait it out like it's a bad trip. And I...
So you think of these... When you say you're listening to one of these voices that you say, I'm under the influence of...
Yeah.
Like, you know. And I mean, that also helps to further separate, to see like the difference between you and this.
Right.
And knowing that you are not that. You're just acting under the influence of that.
So what if there is a control room and there's all of these pieces of you in this room, some of which aren't in your best interest, and you have the option of kicking those out, but
like
you
like a really dark sequel to Inside Out, where
I think about that all the time.
Instead of just like I'm fear, like, and he's cute and he's anxious, like he's a real evil dude that wants to ruin that girl's life.
Yeah. Because I talk to people all the time about...
This is a great sequel. We should write this.
I talk to people... Oh, that would be a good skit. I talk to people all the time about jealousy, and they're like, oh, I'm jealous. Oh, also that it's celebrated in this culture drives me insane. Because it's like, well, it's disgusting. Like, it's disgusting.
In what ways is it celebrated?
Like memes and everything else. Like it's okay to make someone else responsible for your feelings of security. And that other bitches talking to my men, like that, this kind of idea of owning someone, where jealousy is insatiable. You cannot satisfy jealousy. If I start telling you that so-and-so is making me feel jealous, and then you stop talking to so-and-so, that's not going to fix it. It's like a cancer. It's just going to get worse, and it's going to want to be fed more and fed more and fed more until I am, I can't move. I'm going through who you like stuff on Instagram. I am, you know, because I've been jealous, and it sucks. It's the worst feeling. It's the walls are closing in on you, and it doesn't shut the fuck up until it takes over your entire life. And under... nothing feels safe under the influence of jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times when I talk about the things I learned after a marriage full of jealousy and how awful the jealousy was, the experience of jealousy, and what I learned from that is that I can't hold on to someone. I have to find that peace within myself. And for me, it's holding on looser. And I've had people be like, oh, I can't do that. I'm very jealous. And it's like, well, it's a decision to have that be a part of you. So here's my theory. And I'm still kind of fleshing this out. I've been talking about it nonstop because I'm kind of working it out. So our room.
I like that you do that, by the way.
Just nonstop grind.
It can be very intense. It can be over. It can be very overwhelming. But I think it's a cool attribute that you have, where you work on something. And,
yeah.
And then you work on it, 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 and then you work on it.
This is how I get rid of
something mental. I don't know. This might be too. I was just talking to my oldest friend, Roxana, who listens to this podcast, and was telling me that people don't think about their thoughts like you and me. And I was like, that's not true. Doesn't everyone think about their thoughts? What do you mean?
This is how I ditch dudes on Tinder now. Is what? They're like, so what are you into? Like, I don't know what they expect me to say.
Watching Aaron fuck other people. Is that how you get it? If no one signs up to get fucked by me, and they're like, well. The fear in their eyes.
Message me on Facebook. I tell them that I spend my days thinking about the nature of consciousness and whether or not we live in a video game, and I cannot believe
and the
how
same
many,
look of fear strikes their eyes.
How many dudes go running? Like, it just saves me the time of having to say that my babysitter canceled, because I'm just like, this will get rid of you. But it is all I am really ever truly thinking about.
Me too. I just think that at the end of the day, the world, whatever this world is, if it's a video game, if there's an afterlife, if there's a God, at the end of the day, you have what you perceive it all in your own brain.
Right.
Everything that happens, whether it's real or simulated, still gets processed in your brain. Your brain is all you have. I love this monologue from True Detective about the locked room. It's a locked room. You're just in there. That's what life is. You experience it in your brain. Why wouldn't I spend some time looking around in there?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't this is all that my
this
life
is? This is all there is.
I should probably figure out why I think the things that I think and why I feel the things that I feel. So I love exploring my feelings. I'm just like, let's sit down and think about this. That's why I spent that hour on the bed where I was just like upset about Tabitha shit, and I was getting all kinds of anxious about different things. I was supposed to go on the road and drive, and I was like, I think I would just like to take some time and sit with my thoughts for a minute. And I thought everyone did that.
No.
Why wouldn't you do that?
There are sometimes when I talk to people, I was like, oh my God, what? Is it just silence? Is it the static from old TVs happening in most people's heads? Because there is not a lot happening.
But Roxana said that's also why everyone else is happier than me. And I was like, oh, damn, that one cut deep. Whew, maybe I should stop. But anyway, back to your theory.
Okay. So we have the room where our consciousness is happening, and that is a operating system. And there are a ton of programs running in this operating system of your consciousness, and you don't have to have the ones that suck. That none of them are innately part of you. They are things you have picked up, things that were passed on, things that your parents put into you, things that your experience has put into you. Who the fuck was just talking about how you can have one, oh, in that one meeting, how you can have one experience and get burned and then just decide that that's how that experience is going to turn out forever.
Oh, yeah,
and Simon that's false.
That. Yeah.
So then you have all of these like fears and insecurities and things that you build up to be something else, and they start to steer your life, and you can just go through and clean the programming out and take out everything that doesn't serve you. And if you know that every voice in your head isn't one voice, and that it isn't every program running isn't innately you, you can go through and remove these things and become exactly what you want to be.
You also really need to finish season 2 of Westworld.
I'm trying.
You make it 7 minutes into every episode and then fall asleep. So hard.
And then I don't even get, like, you're like, there's two different timelines.
Yeah, that's crazy. All right, so this isn't a spoil. I get nervous about spoilers because I have a brother who doesn't like want to know if I thought something was good. Like he considers that a spoiler. Now he doesn't care. Like he's just like, oh damn it. Well now I know that it's good. Fuck. I wanted to go in knowing nothing. But yeah, this if you're there's like two different timelines in this season, and just I had no idea.
No, I don't.
I was like,
it's so hard.
What did you think happened? Like when this guy just like traveled across, like because he'll go for he's like with one person.
Yeah, I couldn't
building,
figure that out.
And then it's like, and then he's like wearing different clothes, looks different.
I was like,
outside,
dude, is there
two of him? With three different characters, and you're just like, this show is fucking weird. I don't know why Aaron keeps telling me to watch this show. From what I can tell, it's about a man who can bend space and time. Westworld, you say. Okay. Westworld, got it. Oh, man. But in this season...
Okay, potential spoiler alert for the next minute and a half. Aaron is going to use a very good analogy that I didn't want to take out from the second season of Westworld. And the analogy is about kind of the premise of the second season of Westworld. So I don't think it ruins anything. But then again, I can't get through the first episode. But if it's something that you're picky about and you're someone who gets annoyed about the slightest spoiler, in lieu of sending us an email about it, please just fast forward for the next minute and a half.
So, I mean, the show is about robots. For the people that don't know, it's about robots who become sentient, right? And there is so much of your alien school imagery at work in that show. Mm. It always makes me think of you. It always does. When you talk about playing a video game and like living multiple lives and coming back again and again.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff. But in season 2, they start talking about voices. They use, because all these robots have programs. They've all been programmed with like core beliefs, and like that's what what they do in the park, right? Right. They're just programmed to be the farmer's daughter. That's their program. But in season two, as these robots start waking up, they start referring to their programs as voices. They call them voices.
Fuck.
Even Maeve is like, she talks about how she hears a new voice now. Now that she is waking up, like all these robots have been questioning about, like, do I love this person because I love them, or because I was programmed to love them? Did I have any choice at all? This is a common theme, and like they're talking about these new voices, which seem to be like their true selves, like the ones that are behind everything. And it's really you're gonna love it once you stay awake through the opening credits. All right, we'll wrap it up. Is that a sigh of exhaustion?
No, I'm just thinking, should we record that? Is that a spoiler? Like, record that if you haven't watched Westworld, maybe.
Yeah, it was too much.
It's so fucking good, but how long has that show been out?
It just ended. It just ended. Yeah. So we go back and put
so
a spoiler.
Fucking perfect, though.
But it really, yeah. This is why I hope people are checking out. Like, we've got a subreddit that is lightly populated, and I feel like it is the perfect place for more further discussion of Mormon and the Method, because I think Reddit lends itself to like cool debates and stuff, but it's also got
it's
a layer
anonymity.
Of yeah, exactly. So when we're talking about taboo stuff like we usually do,
yeah,
or if you don't want to admit that you saw voices and colors one time in your head, you can do it on our subreddit. But while speaking of that, we've got a Facebook page that you can like, a Facebook group that you can join,
Patreon. MormonandTheMethHead.com. You get two bonus episodes every month where we interview other people. There's also a couple segments that are starting. And then if we have any videos or extra content that goes with an episode, we put it on the Patreon. We are also going to be in Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
I just found out that they let meth heads in Utah.
They do. You're totally allowed. It's a common misconception.
That's excellent. So that is June 12th.
Almost. That was a couple weeks ago. you were doing. I'm very proud of you still.
I usually make Aaron do all of this.
Jess's relationship with time is so strange. It's just. She'll book something at Wise Guys at like June 12th next year just to be right about this. She'll be like, no, I see the future. And that's. I was hearing a different voice, the future voice. When I did that. But Thursday, July 12th, we're going to be in Salt Lake City at the downtown Wise Guys. You can get tickets already at wiseguyscomedy.com. And that actually kicks off a little tour for me and Jessa. We're going to go on the road together for a couple weeks. We're going to go to Washington and Oregon, and then we wrap up in Idaho.
At Liquid Laughs? Liquid, or is it just Liquid now?
I don't know. I'm going to call it Liquid Laughs because it sounds too weird to tell people I'm performing comedy at a place called Liquid. Liquid does not sound like that. That's not a word that I associate with comedy, you know? But Laughs, there you go.
Yeah.
But Liquid Laughs in Boise, July 20th, 21st, 22nd. We're going to be there. I think you can get tickets at their website already as well. And for the in-between, if you live in Washington or, you know, Northern Oregon, go ahead and look at MormonMethHead.com or our Facebook page, and you can get more information on all our tour dates there.
Listen to the good voices.
Mormon and the Method will be back next week. See you guys there.
If you put a Mormon and a meth head together, this is what they sound like. Aaron Woodall and Jessa Reed are friends. Listen to them talking to Mike.